Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Mitch Wertlieb. This week, we're going to highlight a few local authors with new or newish books out, and our conversations will culminate in a full hour-long book show on Thursday where you can share your favorite recent reads, local or otherwise. And we'll start this series off with an interview with Jeffrey Lent. His new book, Before We Sleep, tells the story of a Vermont family in the late 1960s still dealing with the effects of World War II and how one father's experience in the war shaped his family's dynamic. At the beginning of the novel, 17-year-old Katie Snow is sneaking away from home. She's just been told some life-changing facts about her family, and she sets off to discover more on her own. When Lent sat down with Vermont Edition host Jane Lindholm to talk about the novel, she asked him to read a few lines from Katie's early morning escape.
Back down through a swale of pucker brush, sumac and choke cherry, the smell of a swamp in the early summer, pumping of frogs. Then abruptly she braked, as a tangle of legs like skeletal marionettes jerked and slid upon the slick, summer-warm pavement, the tawny bodies rising and falling, a great set of luminous besieged eyes turned into the headlights as the doe froze, and the fawn scrambled to stand quivering beside her. And Katie was rolling to a stop, even as doe and fawn fled off into the dark again and were gone.
How do you write like that? In radio, we are taught to write like we speak, so they're very short, declarative sentences. You wouldn't say anything on the radio that doesn't sound natural in speech. I don't know if I could write that beautifully anymore. How do you think about the words that you're putting on a page when you're writing them?
You know, that's literally part of the mystery for me. Hmm. I have a very strong visual sense, and you know, in my head. But how that exactly translates into the language that comes into my head to describe it, I honestly have no idea, except obviously long years of practice and trusting in the process and editing.
Uh-huh. So editing is a big part of it for you?
Yeah. Yeah. I work very hard to have my sentences come out just the way I want them to.
A tangle of legs like skeletal marionettes jerked and slid upon the slick summer-warmed pavement. It is so visual. I mean, the words are not simple, but it absolutely gives you a picture of those deer with those long stick legs. And it's just a lovely, evocative way you have of writing. I really appreciate it.
Well, you know, Jerry Garcia once said, talking about the Grateful Dead, he once said, we're a lot like licorice. Some people like licorice. Some people don't like it at all. But those that like it really like it.
So are you the licorice and I am the one who likes it?
Yeah. You know, I mean, the way I write infuriates some people. And others just really get caught up in the rhythm of the language. And I know from hearing from people, I'm somebody that you have to read slowly.
Absolutely.
And sometimes have to reread. And that can be maddening, I'm sure.
Do people tell you that? I mean, people have told you that they find your writing infuriating?
Well, not – I mean, no. There are people who just don't like it. And they don't tell me why, you know, but usually I think it's the density of the prose.
You write frequently about the past, and your novels, at least the last two, have been set in the past. This one is a generation ago. It doesn't feel sepia-toned. So how do you get yourself in the place to be writing about the past – as a presence, as if you're there? Do you imagine yourself there? Do you do extensive research?
I do research on really small things that I want to get just exactly right. You know, like a particular song that would have been playing on the radio in 1952. That I really like to get right. This book, I think part of it is that I grew up with the generation of kids whose parents had lived through World War II and many had served. And that informed my childhood. And I think also just the whole idea that that particular generation went off to fight the good war and won it and came back and pulled themselves up by their bootstraps and went on. I wanted to write about the other side of that a little bit, the ones who had a harder time. Because as kids, you know, we all knew, like the one guy that was a parent of friends, you knew that you never approached him from behind without making noise, humming, or letting him know you were there. It wasn't a huge big deal. It was just sort of part of what we knew to do. And of course, there were more, you know, there were other people who were much more damaged by what they experienced and what they saw and perhaps by what they did. And I wanted to write about that a little bit. I guess I'm really interested in different time periods and different events and how people reacted to them, and also how they sort of become, what's the right word, bracketed. And again, I'll jump here now to Katie, because she is 17 years old in June of 1967, the chapters that follow Katie, and writing about a young, fairly naive woman from rural Vermont who is just beginning to be touched by the events of the 60s, as we now think of them, was tremendously difficult because we tend to think of the 60s in a series of cliches. Again, that's a real interesting part of writing about any period of time, is to try to get it right and get it fresh and also but make it true as well.
We're sort of dancing around the edges of the plot here, and you've really filled in the context, but can we talk about the characters? Because they're wonderful characters. Katie Snow, as you said, is 17, and she's really trying to figure out who she is and find herself and understand her place in the world at large and in her family. Her father is Oliver Snow, who was in World War II and is that, in some ways, damaged character that you've been talking about. And then her mother, Ruth, is damaged in a different way, because when you love and marry someone who's damaged by war and or they come back damaged, you have to figure out your life around that person. And that's a difficult thing as well. And you tell all three of these stories in different ways as they sort of swirl around one another. Anything else you'd like to add about the characters for listeners?
I can tell you, I'll tell you this story. This is the absolute genesis. This is the second book of a two-book contract, so it was conceived of 5 years ago. I have two daughters who are at present almost 19 and 16, so they were 5 years younger. And I kind of was doing a rough outline for this World War II novel, and my oldest daughter, I overheard her in a conversation with my wife talking about some book and saying, I just wish someone would write something with two strong female characters. And I thought, well, I can do that, you know. And the ironic part, of course, is that by the time I got around to writing it, both girls were advancing into their teenage years. And so I became an observer of that mother-daughter dance that goes on.
Early on, Katie says, this is it. This is how it will go. Whatever I find will be different from what I thought. And as I read that line, I thought, well, that's the true coming of age, isn't it? You understand that life is going to be different. It's going to unfold differently than you may have imagined. But then 4 pages later, Katie thinks of her mother and how her mother has been wrong about so many things. And she, Katie, had known that for a long time. And, you know, you realize, oh, right, she is wavering back and forth between maturity and immaturity. You've really crystallized the mother-daughter relationship in this book in a way that is both warm and cold, in the way that teenagers run hot and cold, and so do their moms. I've also noticed, and I haven't read all of your novels, but there does seem to be a theme throughout at least several of them, that you have a bit of an affinity for writing about young women with strength, but also a very clear vulnerability, or in some cases, a piece of themselves that's broken. Is that a preoccupation for you?
I'm thinking about that. I think all of us carry broken parts around. I think men just hide it better.
And maybe I'm being unfair because, you know, the men in your novels are not undamaged either. So I may be using some filter of my own to pick out this theme that's not quite fair.
No, I think you're right. But I think that women tend to be a little more open in their ability to speak their emotions. And because of that, the broken parts can show through more easily, even if they're not intending them to. A lot of men try to hold things very, very close, and so those broken parts can be hidden or masked, perhaps a little more effectively. I think it all comes out in the end in one way or another. You know, since I was about 12 years old, I've been paying really close attention to women and how they live and work and function in the world. And I think in some ways I was fortunate in that, you know, I really came of age in the 1970s as opposed to the 60s. By that time, there was more of a general sense that men and women were of equal. So I think that at least, you know, in those years of innocence, there was a greater opening to talking about emotions and feelings and stuff like that.
Well, I loved this book, and I appreciate you speaking with me, and I really appreciate that your work is dense, because in a time where I listen to podcasts at double speed and try to speed read my way through all of my notes for the day's show, I can't do that with your work. And as much as it may be frustrating, it's also a wonderful chance to slow down. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Jane.